Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Get expert advice from your friendly healthcare team at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
So the tenor of most of the texts and WhatsApps and emails about Stephen Fry are, I could listen to Stephen Fry all day. And we could do that, but you know what? The thing about this show is we always have something else good coming along and often something better. So the Menendez brothers are back in the public consciousness again, and there's two new TV shows at least. Social media and the internet are obsessed. Kim Kardashian has weighed in now. It feels like it's kind of weird, slightly creepy, kitschy cultural moment. But like there is a real awful human tragedy story behind it as well. So Dave Hanratty of the No Encore podcast joins me now to explain all. Good afternoon, Dave.
Good afternoon, Brendan.
Okay, so for people who don't know about the infamous Menendez brothers case, take us back to 1989. What happened?
Yeah, August 20th, 1989, Lyle Menendez, 21-year-old, and also his younger brother Eric, who was 18, they ambushed their parents while they were watching television. They massacred them, essentially. They walked into the den of their very wealthy home in Beverly Hills. These are very rich people that we're talking about here, and they unloaded shotguns into their parents, killing them obviously instantly. Brutal slayings. And from there, not immediately though, I should say, like months later when they were finally arrested for these crimes and put on trial, we found ourselves, you know, like the watching world. This was one of the first examples of court as reality TV. And it's a fascinating case because this is open and shut in terms of what happened in that room. This is a mystery without a mystery, but this is actually a very, very complex case, because what would follow in the courtroom was that the lads put together a defence saying, no, this was actually self-defence. We were abused by our father, and that's why it happened. So it's actually not quite as clean cut as it initially seemed.
Yeah, okay. And this is possibly why in different eras there are numerous passes off it and it comes back again. So the interesting thing, in the immediate aftermath of the shootings, even though you would think they were the prime suspects, they were saying, like, we had gun residue all over our hands, nobody checked anything. The first kind of theory was that the father was actually this really big figure in business and the entertainment world. The first theory was it was a mafia hit.
Yeah, which isn't as far-fetched as it might initially appear, because yes, he was a high-ranking record executive with RCA Records. And this is at a time as well when record deals were massive, massive business. I mean, when the parents were killed, the boys inherited a $14 million trust. So he was a huge figure in his world, and he had a lot of connections to a lot of different people. And there was initially the theory that maybe it was a rival executive who he'd upset, who hired a hitman to get revenge, or it could even have been maybe a rising hopeful in the music industry whose dreams were crushed and they decided to take revenge. But the other kind of reason as well why detectives pursued that line of inquiry was the nature of the killings, just how brutal it was. They thought maybe this was someone sending a message, not dissimilar to the Manson family murders in a similar kind of wealthy part of the world. So as it turns out, that was not the case. And you are correct in saying that the guys, the two Menendez brothers, did in fact have gunshot residue on their hands that night when the police came calling. And if they simply had taken them aside and done that test with them, that's it. But they didn't. They didn't see these guys as suspects.
But how it ultimately then attention was drawn back to them was they went on this kind of crazy spending spree, didn't they?
Yeah, so it's estimated that they spent $700,000 in the space of about 5 or 6 months after the murders took place. Now, members of their own family have since said, actually, that's not out of line with how they live their lives.
Okay.
However, the watching public wasn't looking at them at that point. But yeah, they bought Rolex watches, they bought a sports car, they bought a Jeep. One of them bought a cafe and turned it into a restaurant. One of them hired a very expensive tennis coach and actually competed in tennis tournaments. And both of them ended up fleeing the mansion in Beverly Hills and just getting condos by a marina. So once that happened, and because before this no one knew who they were, but now people did start to take notice, and they said, well, wait a minute, maybe it is in fact them who did this, and maybe they did it just for the money.
Okay, so then, as you say, probably the first of the big televised trials, and it became an absolute sensation in America, didn't it? And worldwide, really.
Huge, yeah. I mean, this was kind of a test case for court TV, which had actually launched a couple of years before the first trial occurred. So it kind of got its foot into the public consciousness a little bit. By the time 1993 rolls around and the trial does unfold, you can watch it from the comfort of your living room. We'd never had anything like this before. Reality television, you know, depending on who you ask, someone will say it began in the 1940s, but nothing like this. So like our primary kind of modes of media back then were newspapers, television coverage, and radio coverage. We didn't have social media like we do now, but this was the first instance of something like this going viral. Everyone was tuning in, and it set the scene for the OJ trial. trial, O.J. Simpson trial, the trial of the century, which would occur in 1995. So people found themselves just glued to this. And it should be said, what happened in that courtroom was genuinely compelling.
And the weird thing then is that it becomes like, instead of being a real trial in a way, they became a kind of a celebrity kind of story or a cultural kind of meme almost, didn't they?
Oh yeah. I mean, what happens to a celebrity when they become a celebrity? They become content. They become caricatures. And in the case of the Menendez brothers, and again, we really can't get away from how harrowing this case is in terms of what happened in that room and what is alleged to have taken place before that night. But no, if you looked at Saturday Night Live, there was sketches about these guys. There was people pretending to be them. There was David Letterman, Jay Leno opening up their talk shows with monologues about them and using them as a punchline. There were comedians getting their kind of feeding frenzy in as well. There were nightly debates. There were people saying that, you know, interviewed Vox Pops on the street. They became fodder for just about everybody. And it is kind of strange to look at the details of the case and how they were put into that kind of comedic circle. But that is what happened. And that is, I think, speaking to a time as well in the early 90s, mid 90s, when things like empathy and compassion, which, you know, some people might still struggle with today, but I think we're a lot more sensitive to that kind of thing now.
Yeah, it was all irony back then, as I remember, wasn't it?
Yeah, totally.
So the first trial in 1993 ended in a hung jury. There was a second trial in 1996. What happened then?
So this, I know earlier on in the show, the phrase kangaroo court was thrown around. A lot of people would suggest that that's what this was in the second trial. Because in the first trial, you had very emotive testimony, particularly from Lyle Menendez, in which he said, our father physically, verbally and sexually abused us. And that's why we did what we did. It was actually self-defense. We feared we were going to be killed. And that convinced an awful lot of people that maybe these guys are victims too. But in trial number two, that was gone. That was stricken from the record. A new jury was told, you can't consider that. That is not evidence anymore. And also, crucially as well, this came after the OJ trial. So people had kind of, you know, had their fill a little bit. This wasn't as glossy, maybe, and as interesting as that was. And on top of that, Court TV, not a thing. The judge banned the cameras from the courtroom. So it kind of slipped down in terms of media coverage. And then in the end, after about 6 months, some people have said that this was engineered to just get a conviction. The DA needed a win after OJ as well. And 6 months later, they were found guilty of first degree murder. They had no defense. There was just no defense this time.
And why is it back in the consciousness now?
So we have two things on Netflix. We have the television show Monsters, which follows on from the Jeffrey Dahmer story Monster from a year or two ago. Ryan Murphy is the man behind that. He's behind American Crime Story and various other salacious things like that as well. And you have a documentary on Netflix as well called simply The Menendez Brothers, in which we hear from them for the very, very first time in a very, very long time, if ever, through a series of phone calls that was captured by a journalist. This plays out over the documentary. So it's back in the news for those reasons, but actually it has been circling around social media for the last few years as well. A lot of people have taken attention to this case, but right now, yes, it is in fact, in terms of the algorithm and in terms of the top things most watched in this country and around the world, it is likely to be that dramatization by Ryan Murphy in particular.
Okay. And is there a sense that something could change now? I suppose, like, you talked about the lack of empathy back then and everything. We're in a post-Me Too world now where the notion of abuse is considered very differently probably and taken much more seriously. Is there a sense that something could change?
There's a huge sense that something could change because, for starters, their case is being re-examined. Next month, there will be a ruling. They are trying to get their murder sentences commuted or vacated entirely on the grounds that they were unlawfully imprisoned because the evidence that they previously provided wasn't considered. There is new evidence that has come to light via a relative who has since passed on, but there was a letter written to him saying, I'm being abused by my father. There's even an allegation by a boy band member who Jose Menendez would have worked with back in the 80s that he was drugged and sexually assaulted as well. Then you have Kim Kardashian, and I know some people might scoff at her involvement whatsoever in this, but Kim Kardashian has become a law advocate. She's gone to college. She's got a degree. She's often gone to the White House to talk about prison reform and changing sentences. And you have this massive social media movement as well saying that it's time to release these guys, and also what is prison for if not rehabilitation? So, and it should be said as well that the prosecutor in the original trial, who desperately wanted to convict the two Menendez brothers and has said that she was annoyed that she didn't get to be the one to do so, she did say that whatever my feelings about whatever else, the father of these boys was a monster, I believe, and the world is a better place without him in it. So there's all this kinds of compelling evidence that wasn't really listened to in trial number two. And so next month, we're going to see if actually something will change.
Okay, so could we agree then to conclude that this it's deeply weird that this has become a semi-nostalgic kind of entertainment. The internet involved in bringing justice, potentially. It is like it's something that could really only happen in 2024, isn't it?
I think so. I mean, if you look at TikTok, for example, where this is big business as well, you have a lot of amateur detectives, amateur sleuths who insert themselves into investigations and in some cases help, but in a lot of cases do hinder as well. And there was a case in the UK a while ago about a missing teenager, and there were people going to try and find him, but they were saying stuff like, follow me on TikTok, I'll be updating it. So you have to question the sincerity of some people involved. But it is weird. I mean, it does reflect, you know, we've always been connected to true crime. We've always loved this kind of stuff. We've always watched it. But this is a new avenue on it. But it could, in fact, lead to social change and justice change.
Okay. Dave Hanratty, host of the No Encore podcast. Thank you very much. As always, we'll take a break.